Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Marks. And today I have a really special guest with me, and her name is Bethany. And the reason why I really wanted to bring Bethany on is I have been working with her personally from some of my own health things I've been sharing here on the podcast and on my social. And I've had so many women ask me questions. So I knew I had to have her on here so we can get some just more answers from the professional. So Bethany, welcome.
I'm so happy to be here, Lauren. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So I really want to start with kind of, I know you had your own personal journey of why you got started. So tell us kind of what you do and what really started you on this journey of functional medicine.
Yeah, I'd love to share. So I am a functional medicine nurse practitioner. I was trained conventionally as a family nurse practitioner, but found functional medicine through kind of my own health journey and then also the healthcare world. And would love to share a little bit about that. So growing up, I always knew I wanted to be in something medicine, right? I wanted to take care of people. I loved just being there for people in a time of need and wanted to meet those needs through medicine. And so I was studied for to be a nurse, and I was a nurse for 5 years at the Cleveland Clinic's main campus, and great organization. Really glad I got the training there. But I was stuck in that tertiary care, which means we're at the very top level. People already had the heart attack. People already had the cancer. And then I was taking care of the back end effects. And I really wanted to be on the front end of preventing those things rather than just kind of playing catch up. Or I'd have a patient come in that just felt so unwell for so long, and they were never taught about simple things like diet and how that could affect their fluid overload for a heart failure patient. So it really got me thinking, okay, there's something missing on the front end of care here. And meanwhile, kind of through those years, I was also going through my own digestive issues. I was diagnosed with IBS as a kid. I was in and out of the ER multiple times throughout high school and in college. And I was put on multiple medicines, right, to kind of help stop this pathway of IBS. And it was really frustrating for me personally. And I kind of just took it into my own hands to really research what's going on. How can I prevent this from happening? Why do I need medicine for my stomach to feel okay? And I started to look at how sleep and stress and my nutrition and my lack of movement, all of those things started to impact my gut health and my stomach and my symptoms. And as I made changes to myself, I was able to wean myself off of those medicines. And thankfully, I didn't need any like surgical intervention, although a gallbladder removal was offered to me. So thankfully, I got to kind of see my own healing through what I didn't know was called functional medicine at the time. And I stumbled upon it through kind of looking at that, how can I be on the front end here? How can I prevent disease and promote actually feeling well, actual health? And I found functional medicine. So that is a root cause approach to things rather than fixing things maybe with a Band-Aid like a medicine, for example, my IBS. And for IBS, for people who don't know, irritable bowel syndrome, I've been saying that. So it really brought me through my own journey, through seeing my own patient's journey. I wanted to be on that holistic front end, looking for their underlying root cause and addressing that naturally.
I love that because that's exactly why I came to you. And one of the first things I told you is I feel like I'm still young, mm-hmm. and the things mm-hmm. that I'm noticing, there has to be just a different way than exactly what you said of just slapping a Band-Aid on it to really get to the root and change it that way. Because I too have struggled with gut issues and have been labeled as IBS. So just since you had your own experience, what were some of the symptoms, in case anyone's wondering, of what you noticed?
Yeah, for sure. So I had irregular bowel movements. So sometimes I would feel really constipated. Other times I would eat a meal and I would need to find that bathroom right away. I had terrible stomach pain, honestly, chills, even like with my stomach pain, like things that I'm like, something's not right. Just whether it was right after a meal, I was really bloated, just all these digestive symptoms that, sometimes I could find a reason why. And other times I'm like, I have no idea why, what did I eat? I ate this meal last week and was fine. So just really kind of vague symptoms like that. And that bled into other areas in my body, like feeling fatigued, feeling worn out, brain fog, trying to think of some other ones that kind of I experienced. You know, thankfully my menstrual cycle stayed fairly regular, but we know gut health is so tied to our hormone health, which we're going to get into in this podcast, I think. But yeah, so those are some of the symptoms I had initially.
Now, was there any like one thing you kind of started with? Did you start working on your nutrition first?
You know, yes, absolutely. So I started working on my nutrition and I realized, okay, I almost got really frustrated. And I'll share this because I think that people will resonate with this. When I started to look at all of the things that maybe could help me, I was getting mad. I was like, why has nobody told me this before? Why, you know, is the recommendation just a medicine or just a quick fix? Why has no one taught me these things? And I was really frustrated. And then I was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed with information because I'm like, there's so much out there that's telling you, oh, eat a high fat diet, eat a low fat, time restricted eating, intermittent fasting. No, don't do that. It's bad for this. And it was really confusing. So, you know, people who are listening, like you're not alone in that, that it's very tough to navigate. But what I did is, for myself personally, and what now I teach my patients is I started with the basics. So what I put into my body, obviously my digestive tract is going to be digesting that, moving it through my body. It's using that for nutrition, for not just fuel, but for, you know, those nutrients that we need to, for cellular processes to take place. So I did start cleaning up my diet, just trying to eat more fruits and vegetables, decreasing high fat fried foods, decreasing sugars, and just trying to lean a little bit more into just whole foods. It's kind of a foreign concept in our boxed world, processed food world, but that's where I started. But stress was another huge thing for me. I was working, I was in school. So I was overwhelmed. I was kind of burning the candle at both ends, as people may say. So reducing stress actually had a major impact on my gut, which gut brain connection, there is definitely one. So those are just a few things I started with.
That reminds me of our first conversation. And our listeners know that I facilitate breath work, and it was something that you actually said was good. So I would love for them to hear in your words why the breathing exercises can be good for your health.
Absolutely. Breath work is amazing because we can access it anywhere. And I think that's one of the best tools you can have, is not something that, you know, you have to spend a ton of money for or only have when it's plugged in at home. It's, you can take your breath with you anywhere and you can access it anytime. So we have a nerve in our body called the vagus nerve, and it connects multiple different organs, but starts in our brain and it goes down. It connects into our diaphragm and into our digestive tract. And so just from thinking about that nerve, we know there's a connection with neuronal pathways from our brain into our diaphragm, which controls our breathing, and then into the digestive tract. And when we access and activate that vagus nerve by breathing, which we can talk a little bit deeper about, it helps to calm our digestive tract. It tells our brain to switch out of that kind of fight or flight mode that we get stuck in, that kind of ramped up. I have a to-do list as long as my left arm. I have kids, you know, needing me. I have parents needing me. I have this to get done. Or kind of like that just ramped up feeling, you're like wired and tired. That's that fight or flight response, the sympathetic nervous system. And when we use breath work to kind of shift out of that into a rest and digest state, so we're lowering our heart rate, we're increasing our breath, but a deeper, more full breath that reaches the bases of the lungs where we have our most blood flow, that is a way to shift out of that fight or flight response and activate the vagus nerve and calm our digestive tract.
Yeah. So it not only affects like our mind and be able to calm like our nervous system, our body, but it actually helps calm for our gut support, right?
Yeah. So I'm hearing mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that was, yeah. I was like, so glad when you said that. I'm like, oh, good. I feel like, you know, I'm doing something before we get to
yes.
tools to like help me on this healing journey. And one of the main things we really want to touch on today is hormones, because I don't think we're really taught properly at a younger age about it to really understand our body. Because as women, it's like, oh, you know, you're at this young age and you start your period and then you go in through your 20s. If women struggle with the infertility, and then eventually we get through this weird stage that I'm now, and then so there's so many stages, but I don't really think we're ever really taught. Because when I came to you, I was like, I don't know what's going on in my body, but what's going on with my periods, I assumed it had to be hormonal. So I know we had kind of mentioned kind of even going back a little bit, just because of those, like I said, those younger years, we don't really have all those tools yet. So wherever you want to start, let's go
for it. Sure. Well, you know, just to kind of echo what you're saying, I am so passionate about teaching, empowering women and giving them information about their bodies, about their hormones throughout their lifespan. And so they know what to expect when things go awry. I think, you know, whether it's our school system or health system, we haven't done a great job of educating women in that regard. And that starts at a young age of knowing, you know, okay, what is estrogen and progesterone? When should I expect it to rise and fall throughout my cycle? How do I feel when those hormones are different? I don't feel the same every day like maybe a man would, where their hormones have kind of a 24-hour cycle. And us, we know we have a longer cycle, 28-day average, but we know that's not for everybody. So kind of just, I really am passionate about giving women information at a young age, and that can empower them to know, this is what my body should be doing, what I should be feeling like, how I can support it hormonally throughout the cycle. And then that can serve them as you navigate the hormonal changes that we all know and can anticipate will come as we go through life. So, you know, simple things of knowing what your body's fertile signs are. So not every day is the same. We, of course, we have a bleed during the first part of the menstrual cycle, or it's called menstruation. And then we head into our follicular phase, where our follicles in our ovaries that become the egg are building up. And then our body is so smart and so amazing, it chooses one best follicle to become that ovum or egg that's ruptured out of the ovary and into our fallopian tubes and travels down into the endometrial lining, which is in our uterus. And that process, as we build up our follicular, as we build up our follicle that becomes the egg, we're building up estrogen. And as we build up estrogen, we have different signs that our body gives us that might be telling us ovulation is approaching. And that's through different cervical fluids. So different things you might see in your underwear that, you know, as a kid, it's like, what's going on when you're like, you know, navigating all this new hormone changes. That's normal. And it gets more and more fertile as you approach ovulation. And then it dries up because our estrogen drops and our progesterone starts to rise. I like saying progesterone as progestation, which means it's supposed to maintain a pregnancy. So when we ovulate, we have this second half of the cycle, which is called the luteal phase, where progesterone kind of dominates. Should we have become pregnant, it builds up that endometrial lining, makes it nice, thick, and cushy, where it maintains that so that our egg could potentially implant. Now, of course, that does not happen every cycle. So when our body realizes, okay, we actually don't have a fertilized egg here, it drops that hormone and triggers a bleed of that lining because we don't need it anymore. And that's the cycle. And, you know, we have temperature changes. We have all sorts of other changes throughout the cycle, but kind of just knowing at least that at a young age. And then when things go awry, say, hey, my periods are getting longer or irregular, or I'm bleeding too much, or I'm bleeding in the middle of my cycle when I'm not supposed to be. And those are signs that your body is giving you that something's off hormonally, and it can help you, empower you to seek help and make those changes before some big thing comes up.
So what would be some signs of like an abnormal period?
Yeah. So an abnormal period would be one that, now let's talk about period, meaning our menstruation, so our bleeding. is one where it's really heavy, really cramping, tons of clotting, lasting for, 7 to 10 days. Or on the other end, where it's really, really light, there's not much of a bleed, and you're not having tons of symptoms. Either way, you can have different signs of a hormone imbalance with that. And then you have the premenstrual, right? PMS. So you've got that premenstrual syndrome, the kind of that week to 10 days leading into your period. You are going to feel different because progesterone and estrogen feel different in the body, but it shouldn't be something debilitating to your life. Uncontrollable mood changes, excessive fatigue, maybe really increased water retention and bloating that's uncomfortable. Many more, but just as a few examples, that's another sign that something might be off in that luteal phase.
The mood was a big one for me. I've still been working through that. It's interesting because not every cycle is the same, but before I start some of them, that mood is very enhanced. So those are just things they should look out for and really notice that something could be off with the hormone balance, the ones that you mentioned, the estrogen.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So is there anything else you want to mention about the actual like period cycle itself or the mood, the hormones, like the fluctuation of them and how much that impacted someone like me? Is there anything else you want to share with
us? Sure. Yeah. I can kind of go in a little bit too. We could have a problem with our hormones when we're imbalanced in either that estrogen or progesterone. So we could have an estrogen dominance problem where we have high levels of estrogen that are just kind of competing for that progesterone balance, even though our progesterone is normal. And, those are some of the symptoms we've already talked about. Of course, the heavy bleeding, having that, excess PMS type symptoms, it can get confusing though, because if we have low progesterone and normal estrogen, then that can also kind of manifest the same way. And that's why testing is really helpful. It can kind of give us a clue of what are we dealing with? Is it high estrogen? Is it low progesterone? Is it both? Is it neither? And can guide our treatment plan a little bit more specifically so that we're able to determine what actually is going on in the cycle. Related to kind of how that changes going into, I'll just say briefly, going into perimenopause years and menopause years, is our cycles do naturally start to shorten because we're having a drop in hormones as we approach menopause, which is when our ovaries don't need to function at that capacity as when we were younger and trying to become pregnant. So our ovaries are producing less of those hormones. And then we see this drop in hormones and we might see changes to the menstrual cycle. And that could be, one of the first signs that, maybe perimenopause, menopause years is in the future. And until then, menopause is where you don't have any bleed, any cycle for that 12 months. That's diagnostic for menopause. And that's just kind of like an overview. And I could talk a little bit more too, if you want, about how we have this access of hormones, adrenal, thyroid, ovarian access. We can talk a little bit about if you would like.
Oh yeah. See, I should have looked at my numbers and stuff beforehand, because I remember one of my estrogen and progesterone, one was really low out of range and one was really high above range. So
yes.
But another one, like you mentioned, is the adrenals. And obviously mine was very low on that and the cortisol. So yeah, we can jump into the adrenals, because that is something, until you brought it to my attention, I knew nothing about it. I don't feel like that's talked about.
Yeah, I love to talk. Sorry, Lauren, go ahead.
No, it's just not something I see very much. But I mean, so I would love for you to dive in and explain that a little more, because when I said it to people, I didn't even know how to give them any, I don't know what it is. So this is all you.
Yeah, sure. So we have an HPA TG axis. Big word. Big acronym, but it's really simple. So HP stands for hypopituitary, which is in our brain. So our brain is where it starts. And then we have HPA, adrenals. These are organs that sit on top of our kidneys that are kind of in charge of producing certain hormones like adrenaline, cortisol, that give us our energy, give us our get up and go. So HPA, T, thyroid, and then G, which is gonads. So in the case of females, we're talking about our ovaries. So we have this access, meaning we have a communication going on between our brain, our adrenal glands, our thyroid, and then our ovaries. And they're all interconnected. So if there's an imbalance in one area, it can become, it can trigger kind of a cascade of events in the other areas. So we always want to think about our adrenal glands and our thyroid and our ovary in combination and not in isolation. And adrenal health is particularly important because, as I mentioned, adrenals produce this hormone called cortisol, which is, like I said, our energy, our get up and go. It gets a bad rep sometimes because it's the stress hormone, right? So if you have too much cortisol all day, you're operating a really high capacity, your heart rate's up, you might be getting recurrent infections because you're fighting, your blood sugar's up, you've got, you know, inflammation increasing. So it could be a bad thing when it's too high. And similarly, it can be a bad thing when it's too low. When our bodies operated at such a high capacity for so long that we drop in our adrenal glands, just aren't producing at the same capacity anymore. We don't have that energy. We feel fatigued. We're dragging to get out of bed, to make it through our days. We also see immune suppression here and an intolerance to exercise, an intolerance to the stress that we used to be able to handle. And you can have, again, a balance of these things in the morning. You could have high and then it drops in the afternoon or vice versa. See it with insomnia, right? High cortisol at night or in the middle of the night, you're waking up. So this adrenal hormone is really important. And our adrenal glands, when our body's under stress, it is triggering more of a need for the adrenal glands to produce that cortisol. And it's telling our HPA axis, hey, send more of our resources to our adrenal glands, not to maybe our thyroid or our ovaries. So then you might see this hormonal dysfunction start to happen because our adrenal glands are recruiting so much of that need. That hormone conversion is going to our adrenal glands for that. And so addressing stress through and improving adrenal health in general, one of which we've already talked about and that you talk about a lot, breath work, accessing our parasympathetic nervous system, our vagus nerve, calming our bodies down, just one way, but adrenal health as a whole, whether that's through light, getting good morning sunlight, restricting light at night that we're, you know, living on our screens these days, eating nutritious meals, including breakfast, throughout the day triggers to our adrenal glands that we are in a good state. We're not in survival mode. And getting light throughout the day. Just, hey, what is my time of day here? The light outside is different from our screens. And there's many other things like magnesium and B vitamins that we could go into. But that is so important for our hormone health because it can affect our hormones in that axis.
So what affects our adrenals? Like, is it mainly the stress? I'm pretty sure that was my problem, but what are some other things we can almost just to prevent to get to this point, especially if we are like high achievers, driven people, we are going to be busy. That puts a different stress on our life, which that's just not something I can kind of get rid of. So what are the things we can work on just to maintain and be like, have healthy adrenals.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And you know, the practice where I practice that is called practical healing. And I like to say that because it's great. It's a great name. We need to be practical about health and not just set these, you know, I always tell my patients, okay, this is ideal according to research, but what's going to be practical and realistic for you? So let's get real practical here with our adrenal health. Stress is going to come, right? You know, that's life. We've got families, we've got jobs, we've got to make, you know, make dinner. And those things just add up into what I like to call this bucket that we have in life. And, you know, we can't always take things out of that bucket. We can't always take stressors away. But what are some things we can do that will take some scoops of water out of our bucket to give us more margin at the top line there, so we're not brimming and overflowing and unable to handle the little drops that come in life, like that, oh, that one extra due date or due line on deadline, excuse me, deadline at work, or just kind of those little things that just set you over the edge. And for that, I love to talk about routine for our adrenal health, because our bodies really do thrive on routine. And I think a lot of that has been lost in our modern world. Our modern world has brought us many good things, including electricity, including shelter, a house. But how many of us go throughout our days without stepping outside, without seeing the actual sun, or we're working from home a lot more, we're on our screens a lot more. We might be working in a cubicle or inside all day taking care of kids. It's easy to just live on our modern world, but what effect is that having on our bodies and on our adrenal glands? So I really like to respect, just think about three times in the day you can honor your body's natural rhythms that it was originally created for. Morning, midday, and at night. Give me 10, 20 minutes if you can, but hey, I'll take 10. So in the morning, 10 minutes, when you wake up, are you hitting the ground running? You go, go, go. Or can you honor that just initial time of waking? And maybe you participate in a meditation, prayer, breath work, something to just access that vagus nerve, communicate to your brain, I'm going to start on a good note here. And I'm in a safe place. I'm not in a stressful place, starting my day. And kind of, you know, let's get two birds here with one stone. Can we do that in front of a natural light source? So in the winter, in the summer, and when it's nice out, even on these warm fall days we're having right now, could we get outside for those 10 minutes within maybe the first hour of waking up? Could you get outside, sit and do your morning meditation or your morning prayer, and just soak in some natural light? You don't have to be sitting in front of or staring in front at the sun or anything. Just get outside, and honoring that time. And then after, could you eat breakfast? Rather than skipping breakfast, could you communicate to your body that, hey, I have an energy source here to use to make hormones, to make, to give my body those nutrients that we need to support our adrenal glands. So that's kind of that morning time. Afternoon, can we move our bodies? Could we get outside again just to say, okay, the sun's straight above my head here. Maybe at lunch, all, you know, you have 30 minutes. That's it. Could you go on a quick little 10 minute walk outside and then come back in and eat, or the other way around for insulin and blood sugar benefit? And then maybe you incorporate a 1 minute of meditation or breath work there, just to, again, cue into your body and say, hey, I am okay. Everything's is maybe stressful around me, but I can come back to my breath. And then at night, honoring that time where our cortisol is naturally dropping in a good way, in a healthy way, so that we can produce melatonin to go to sleep. And can you commit to 10 or 20 minutes of some non-screen relaxation activity before bed? That could be a bath. It could be reading a book that you love. Maybe think about what you loved in childhood that you've given up, drawing or music. Can you access that part of your brain and calm your body down and avoid screens and bright lights? That's going to block that melatonin production. So that's kind of the 3 10-minute segment, if you can, practical way to just kind of help heal your adrenal glands a little bit there.
I love that you touched on the nighttime part, because I know when I first met with you, I told you I was taking melatonin pretty consistently because my youngest was not a good sleeper and just being a single mom. And I feel like I kind of got in that routine of like really bad sleep. And then when more stress kicked in, I got in a bad habit of just taking the melatonin because I felt like, you know, that's what I needed. I'm doing air quotes here, but I felt like I needed it. And then once we talked, I did totally get off of it because I'm like, maybe that was something else kind of throwing me off, just doing it every night. And then I switched to just taking magnesium at nighttime because that has like that calming factor. But also what you mentioned was very helpful. So if there's any listeners that just feel like they're stuck in that routine of maybe, you know, not falling asleep well, but having that night routine and really getting off the phone, I really like to do at least like 2 hours before I go to bed. Just so it doesn't get your brain going too, especially if you do have a lot to do with like your job or there's just like your to-do list is long, like you mentioned. Yeah. I think if we're on our phone and giving ourselves that information right before bed, then that just gets me going more. So having a solid routine has helped. Like I said, coupling that with magnesium instead of melatonin.
Yes. And I would love to add in here, the form of magnesium does matter. So we hear a lot about magnesium, but there's so many different forms and they all act differently. A great one at night is magnesium glycinate to help support sleep. There's another one, neuromagnesium, you might've heard it called, but it helps to support sleep more so than maybe active in the bowel or other areas of the body. And it's healing for the adrenal glands. We need magnesium and B vitamins to support making the right types of hormones. And so that's a great way at night is adding that magnesium in to help you calm down.
Any other benefits of really why you recommend women taking magnesium daily?
Yes. Yes. Also for period cramps and supporting muscles. So we need magnesium for muscle support, and cramping is a sign that we have maybe a little bit of a deficiency in magnesium. I will say in recent research studies, about 90% of Americans are deficient in it in general because it's been depleted from our soils. It's just not present in the foods that we eat anymore. And are we even eating the foods that we should? Fruits and vegetables, colorful foods that contain this magnesium, maybe not so much. And then it's not even in there. So supporting your body, you know, with magnesium at night for sleep, it helps with, I would say, thousands of enzymatic processes in the body. So it's going to help in many ways outside of just sleep, hormones being a huge one, and our period cramps, headaches is another great way magnesium can help kind of help sort support that brain health. So yeah, a lot of benefits. I love that one.
I've definitely noticed better sleep. So I'm glad that I just like trusted it and be like, okay, nope.
Yeah.
No more melatonin for me. But something else I got a question about. Very often as us ladies get a little older is just, the struggle with weight loss. And that just seems a little harder to lose the weight, or they just get stuck in a plateau. So wherever you want to start with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Weight is a conversation that I have with almost all my patients, at some point, right? It's a struggle. And it's not some quick answer that we want. Let me rephrase that. There might be a quick fix that's offered to you. However, what is sustainable? What is, you know, are you able to maintain? And you're not going to just swing back. So before we kind of get into maybe some things we could do, I like to just caution people of those, you know, quick fixes or fad diets that you lose a ton of weight in a really short amount of time and wow, that's amazing. And then what happens when you kind of drift off of that because it's unsustainable, you gain it all back. And I'm nervous, very nervous when my patients are in those type of shifts, because when we lose weight, it's not just body fat, unfortunately. A lot of times it's muscle too. So we're losing body fat and muscle. And then when we gain back, are we gaining muscle back rapidly? No, we're gaining body fat. So our body composition's not changing in the right way with those yo-yo diets. So with, you know, perimenopause, menopause, that absolutely is a more common time to be struggling with kind of this plateaued weight. And if you think about, I've heard it explained once this way, and I hope that maybe this can help resonate with people, but when you think about hormone changes in puberty, and sometimes, you know, there's that chubbiness, and then in puberty years when hormones are changing, and then it kind of, they're, you know, kids go through a growth spurt and they lose that when their hormones even out. Well, kind of think about it a little bit more similarly. It's not the same, but in perimenopause years, we're going through this big hormone shift and our body's trying to compensate for that. So in our adipose tissue, which is body fat, we actually produce something called aromatase. And it's an enzyme that can increase the conversion of testosterone to estrogen. And that does a couple things. Testosterone does also energy, libido. And when we're losing more of that and it's getting converted to estrogen, estrogen can cause some more, when it's recirculated in the body, of course, estrogen dominance, and it can cause more of that weight gain and then more of the fatigue. So we're exercising less. And that is, in a way, the body trying to compensate for menopause years. We're starting perimenopause, we're starting to drop our estrogen and our progesterone. So it's trying to keep your hormone levels up. So there might be like a little bit of a physiologic reason. But secondly, I think that the perimenopause years has gotten such a negative rep, you know, rep out there. It's like, oh, just you wait, you know, you're going to get the hot flashes. And hey, I've not gone there yet. I cannot say that it's not bad. I know that my patients have said how difficult that time can be. But what I want to do is rebrand perimenopause and menopause years as a new blossoming, a new phase. Like, just in puberty, you're blossoming into this woman that you're going to become. Well, in perimenopause, menopause years, we're changing our hormones that we've had for the last few decades. We're blossoming into a new phase of our hormone years. And those years last a long time. So why can't we maybe take that time to reevaluate our health? Reevaluate, okay, my hormones aren't doing what they're used to be doing for me. How can I view this time as a little bit of a reset? Okay, I can't get away with what I used to be able to get away with. Maybe alcohol or eating kind of crappy on the weekends, but cleaning it up during the week. How can I support my body naturally so that it can maybe maintain, not feel like this need to maintain this weight, extra weight? And a couple ways, you know, of course, paying attention to our calories and in and calories out. You hear that all the time. That's not the only thing. You know, it's not the only thing. It is important though. So paying attention to how much we're consuming, our portion sizes, and then what are you eating? What calories are you eating? Are you eating foods that are maybe high carb and increasing insulin that are increasing your blood sugar, which increases your insulin, and then to bring that blood sugar back down? And that's triggering something to our body to maintain weight, to increase cortisol, which causes us to not lose weight because we're in a stress mode. So thinking about what we're eating, are we eating protein that builds muscle rather than fat? So kind of reshifting our mindset around nutrition and then exercise. It might need to look different in menopause years, perimenopause years, than it did before. Are we exercising way too much? Are we not exercising the right way, such as resistance training is so important for bone health, for muscle growth, going into those, I mean, for your whole life, yes, but especially as we're going into menopause, perimenopause years, because our bone density and our muscle mass does drop pretty consecutively over those decades, downwards. I'm kind of doing a little motion with my hands, but so changing the way we think about exercise and increasing our resistance training, making sure that we're getting good sleep. A lot of women in perimenopause years aren't sleeping well from hot flashes at night. You know, that cortisol dysregulation that's spiking maybe at night, maybe it's blood sugar that's spiking at night that's waking us up. And when we don't sleep well, we waking is way more common to happen. And so thinking about nutrition, our movement, our sleep, of course, all of the stress pieces we've been talking about that increases cortisol, that causes us to maintain that and hang on to weight. And then making sure that there aren't other things going on medically, like thyroid. Is our thyroid off? And maybe we need to check a more comprehensive thyroid panel at this time and see what's going on there. Are we converting the right type of thyroid hormone to get into the cells so that it feels that it can increase our metabolism well? So there's not, you know, again, a quick answer to this. It's a holistic approach, which is what functional medicine tries to take on.
That's honestly my favorite part about it. And I love that you mentioned all those things, because I do hear that just about how everything you said about the premenopause and menopause and how the struggles there. And I too, I don't know, maybe I am premenopause. I don't know with my problems. I have so many, I feel like right now, but it's good to know that they have a place to start. And if, even if that's, if it's talking to you or a nutritionist, just to know, like, I love that you touched on, are you working out too much or too little? Because think about that, like, as you're aging, maybe your workout routine does have to shift. Are there, like, do you have some favorite types of workouts, like, for that phase of life?
Yeah. So definitely for that menopause phase of life, I, two things I think about. One, are we getting some zone two cardio in at least 150 minutes a week? That might sound like a lot, but, and I'm going to kind of explain what that looks like. So zone two is a range of your heart rate. It's about, I want to say 60 to 70% of your maximum heart rate, which we can calculate. There's many online calculators. And you want to kind of stay in that heart range. Usually that's between 110, 120 to 140-ish, 145, maybe a little less than that. Are we increasing our heart rate multiple times a week? And 150 minutes can be broken down into 5 30-minute segments. So this is a 30-minute walk 5 days a week at a brisk pace. That's it. So are we getting that zone two cardio in? That's as simple as it can look. You can, you know, increase the minutes from there or the intensity from there, but that heart rate zone is a fat burning zone and it's improving our heart health. And the number one fatality in women is cardiovascular disease. So this is going to target weight, which affects you right now, but cardiovascular disease, which can affect you in the future. And then resistance training. So 2 to 3 days a week of lifting heavy things safely. So we want to make sure that, of course, body mechanics. And if you never have lifted a weight before, I would highly recommend, you know, seeing a trainer or getting a coach that can kind of help teach you those movements so that you're doing them safely. But that lifting and resistance training can help not only build muscle and change your body composition in the right way, but it improves your bone health and it can increase your testosterone levels when those kind of levels are starting to drop in those perimenopause years. So zone two cardio and resistance training paired together.
No, that's so helpful. Even good to hear for myself as I'm healing, because I do love working out. So I'm probably over working out.
Yeah. And you know, I kind of mentioned overworking out, you know, whether that's really high distance, you know, runners or high intensity interval training every day of the week. We have to be careful that we're not, well, one, are we eating enough to support our bodies when we're exercising that much? Or two, are we triggering to our brain that, you know, HPA TG axis again, are we communicating that we are in a fight or flight, high intensity mode, hang on to that weight, not a time to lose. So we do have to kind of be cautious there. And that's why, again, functional medicine is individualized. It's not just a blanket recommendation for everyone. It's where are you at? You know, what is going to be the key lever for you that we can change here to improve your health?
Well, and that's what's so great about the facility that you work at, because you have those tools to not just get to work with you, but you have a dietitian.
Yeah. So we have, you know, our functional medicine practitioners, myself and two others that are kind of really sitting down with you, getting all the information, the medical side, and of course the functional medicine side. But we also have so many other supporting people around us. So we have functional dietitians that are going to just talk to you about food as medicine and how to, for you individually, what's going to be the thing that helps you. We have counseling team, which is so important, that, you know, we can have maybe some past traumas in our life that we haven't had the opportunity to process through with someone on at all or on a professional level. And even just supporting you, you know, through stress and management techniques. Counseling is huge at our practice. And then we have collaborations with other, you know, definitely other areas. So they're in our practice, in our building, we have acupuncture, we have a chiropractor, we have magnesium salt pools, we have massage. We have connections with personal trainers and physical therapists and pelvic floor therapists. So it's really that holistic approach of what are going to be the things that you need to take care of your body holistically.
No, and it's a beautiful facility. I just felt so comfortable. And honestly, like I felt that relaxing feeling even in my body, just getting to be there and get to know you and the other ladies that I
am
with. Is there any option, say someone's listening to this and they're like,
yes,
okay, I'm not feeling my best and maybe I'm feeling fatigued. Some of the things that I've said, you know, have been going on with my body, and they really know that, okay, I want to get support. Are there any options for some of our listeners that maybe don't live in like Northeast Ohio? Are there any online options?
Yeah. So we do see patients virtually in the state of Ohio, because that's where we're licensed. And, you know, usually we have some patients that come from out of state, you know, as well. They'll make the trip in and we can kind of do more of a unique tailored visit for them of maybe we schedule out a longer day where you see me, the dietitian, the counseling, the, you know, trainer. And so we have options like that for people that are out of state that want to kind of make it worth their while coming to us. But we do have virtual options for patients in the state of Ohio. Legally, that's where we kind of lie. And, you know, a great place to just start, is if you know, say you're from far away and you can't come here, find, you know, either a functional medicine practitioner near you, a functional dietitian. Just get some information, whether that's lab work, testing. I know we didn't really talk tons about that, but there's so much available. And I think it's just really important to have someone to help guide you, because there's, like I said, at the outset of this talk, there's so much information out there, and to try to sift and navigate that, it's really hard. And I think that people really need someone to walk alongside them in their health journey and just be able to say, how they individually can be, you know, what are those levers that they can pull to help them?
Yeah, we can touch on the testing if you want, because I personally had never heard of it till I worked with you and I did the Dutch test.
Yes. Yes. So there's lots of different testing for hormones out there. Of course, in the blood, serum, that can be helpful. For me, I like to look at it in kind of two specific times in the cycle, mid-luteal, which depending on your period times could look at like different days, and then cycles day 3 to 5. And I'll check different levels during that time. But a Dutch test I really love because it uses urine and saliva samples, and it looks at way more than just, you know, just an estrogen level. It looks at how is your liver detoxifying those estrogen levels. We have different metabolites that they get broken down into. Some are more risky than others for DNA damage. And we know that DNA damage can lead to things like breast cancer, endometrial cancer, we can even see different pathways our estrogen goes down that would be more likely for growth of things like fibrocystic breasts or tumor growth, or good thing, bone growth, right? And then there's a better pathway for estrogen, which can be detoxified out of our bodies well. And I can see that all broken down on the Dutch test. And that's why I prefer it, because it gives me a little bit more information about how your body's processing those hormones, not just what the hormone levels are. And that is equally as important.
Yeah, it was really interesting just to learn about, because like I said, I've never heard, but now we get to see the full spectrum to know what we've worked on for the last few months of really working on healing all the areas that aren't in alignment.
Yes. Go ahead, please.
All you, before we finish up, go ahead.
One thing I want to just say too about healing, and we've been talking about, you know, the quick fix that we all want. Healing isn't linear, and it can take time, and we didn't get to where we are overnight, you know? And so I think we have to just also honor and respect that healing process in our body. Sometimes we make some simple changes like magnesium and wow, we're making a big difference in a few areas, but other times things like hormones, especially, it can take some time for our adrenal glands to heal. Say we've had chronic stressors or traumas in our life. We've suffered from a car accident and we had aging parents, and all of this can take time to work through and to see changes. And then even hormonally, our follicles and our ovaries start developing 3 months ago before it's released as the egg. So there can be changes that take time for that process to work itself out. So for anyone listening that's maybe doing some of these things and saying, I'm doing these things, but give it time. You know, trust your body, trust that you are serving your body well through, you know, taking care of yourself in this holistic way. It will start to show itself.
That's definitely me. So thank you for the reminder, because I do feel like I'm just getting a little impatient, because I know what it's like to feel good and I just want to be back in that place. But I'm really, you know, trying to give myself that grace of like, okay, like you said, the stress has been over years, so it's not just going to happen overnight. So I'm trying to give myself that reminder as well. But you gave us so much just good information that I think is just so tangible too, like that people can actually implement now, get in contact with you, the office, like just start feeling good. And like we said in the very beginning, just not putting a Band-Aid on it. We all deserve to feel good, but it's going to take some work. It is. It's not there. I love that you mentioned too about the quick fixes, because I'm so big on that. Like, I don't like the fad diets that are just so, you might see that result right up front, but it's not sustainable. So how can we use these tools? And you gave us so many that are things that we can continue to do even as we get older, like we talked about through the menopause years. So there's definitely just some easy ways that we can really work on sustaining our hormone health and overall with the stress, and to have, you know, to feel our best.
Yeah,
so I really appreciate you sharing so much amazing information. So are there any last words you want to leave our listeners with?
I would say, you know, you are worth it. You are worth healing. You are worth taking back your health, taking back your hormones. Women often are taking care of other people for most of their life, and they prioritize others and such selfless hearts. And I love that about being a woman, that we get that privilege, but sometimes we're put on the back burner. And I just want to say to the person listening that maybe this sounds overwhelming, or you're thinking, well, this sounds great for someone who has the time, but not for me. I've got other people. You know, you can be your best self by taking care of yourself so that you can take care of others better. And you hear that all the time, but it is true. And just, you're worth it. You are worth having health and vitality and feeling your best.
Oh, I love that. And I love that you added in the part about being able to serve others when we take care of ourselves. We can't let ourselves just like run into the ground, because that's not giving our best selves to those we really care about.
Yeah.
So tell our listeners one more time too, how they can find you.
Yes. So I work at Practical Healing. It's a business in Northeast Ohio. It's in Wadsworth, specifically on the Sharon Center Circle. And you can find us on our website, practicalhealingcenter.com. There's a lot of information on there, but you can even schedule an appointment online, or you could schedule a curiosity call. Say you're listening and you're like, hey, I think this might be for me, but I don't really know. I want to hear more about this from the practitioner. You know, just a few minutes, we can talk for free and just see if we're the right fit for you. And so that's probably the best place to go. And then I'm on social media as Bethany FNP, which stands for Family Nurse Practitioner.
And for the listeners too, if you do call and do the curiosity call, but I also really recommend you just going in and seeing the facility.
Yes.
It is just so, I don't know, just relaxing, and there's so much more there to offer. So if you can get there, go in.
Yes. People say it's like a breath of fresh air coming in. It's just a unique space, and it's covered with the people who love and care for you. And we really do. So you can get in, even if you're coming from far away, come for that initial visit. We have a cafe there that's gluten-free and dairy-free and delicious food. So it'll be worth your trip.
Yeah. I already plan on it. I'm like, my last visit with Bethany, I'm taking the time to drive up there. Cause for me, it's a good 40 minutes, but like you said, it's worth it.
Yeah.
So
make a day of it.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
I really appreciate you just giving away this so much helpful information. I know it is needed, because as soon as I started sharing my journey, I had women asking me questions that weren't feeling, you know, their best. So just thank you. I appreciate you so much. And for our listeners, say hell yes to your wellness. Talk to you next time.